Hello, everybody. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge. This is your latest Manchester United news and transfer news this Tuesday morning. Lots to get into. We're talking Lewis Hall. We're talking Fernandes. We're talking Alex Scott. We're talking Romero. We're talking tactical changes by Michael Carrick. We're also going to be talking about the left-back situation involving Cucurella and a couple of other bits as well. Quite a lot to get into on the show this morning. A bit of a setback, but not panic stations. Essentially, yeah, the interesting article in The Athletic about Lewis Hall, about Fernandes, and whilst there probably will be some delays there, but I think the Alex Scott thing, it might be something that occupies us for the next few days. But look, let's fly straight into it. There's something I want to just say straight away. Obviously, we'll delve into the Lewis Hall and the Fernandes stuff, but I think we've seen evidence this morning, and Adam with the first super chat says no to Romero. He's very injury prone and extremely angry and aggressive. Typical Argentinian, down and dirty. Very stereotypical of Argentinians there, Adam. I mean, I like Martinez, and Messi's not bad. He's not bad. But last night, a story came out from quite a credible Argentinian source that Manchester United were looking at Christian Romero of Spurs. Sam C, who we know from the United Stand and does lots of good stuff, he put it out there before anybody else that Man United aren't interested. After that, we've had the Manchester Evening News, Simon Stone, etc. So I think in relation to Romero, we can definitely say it's a no, and it should be a no for the same reasons Adam said. You know, when we played them back in February and he got sent off and Spurs were playing quite well, I actually said, sympathetically for Spurs, why would you want an absolute prat like that playing for your team? You're doing well in a game, away from home, and then one player ruins it for everybody else by being an absolute hot-headed idiot. Don't want him anywhere near Man United. So, no, we're not going for him, and United have briefed that very, very quickly. But you know what? I will say this before we delve into more interesting stuff. This is what frustrates me about United, right? They're more than happy for 9 months to have Elliot Anderson as the top priority and then not go and get him. But when Romero comes out, within 12 hours, multiple people have been briefed that we're not in for him. So they can do it when they want to. So we know these people who come out and defend them and say, well, you know, it's not their job to do this, that and the other. For 9 months, Elliot Anderson. Is he going to be a Man United player or is he going to hold up a Man City shirt? Excuse me. But with Romero, 12 hours of it, no. Tell them it's not true. We're not having that. So they do have the power to stop a story if they want to. And I think sometimes they let stories go because it's in their interest. But sometimes they'll kill it because it's like, that's not in our interest. Anyway, look, that's about Romero. I want to start off, let's talk about Fernandes. Let's talk about Lewis Hall. Let's talk about Alex Scott. So interesting stuff coming out this morning. Essentially, a bit of a setback, but not like the deals are for, you know, transfer blow or anything like that, which we have used in the past, let's be honest. But in relation to Fernandes, this is what The Athletic are saying. Fernandes is high among the names being considered in midfield, and United have held talks regarding fees and wages. Despite their relegation from the Premier League, West Ham do intend to demand £80 million for the 21-year-old, but United are not prepared to meet their asking price, and there is an expectation that over time that fee will fall. PSG also hold an interest in Fernandes. So I think ultimately what I would say about Fernandes is, and it's a little bit of a pick up on what we said last night, there are people out there, journalists, whatever, who are pushing this Fernandes story because it sells, you know, doesn't sell papers because who buys newspapers anymore, but it gets clicks. So there's lots of people pushing this Fernandes story like, oh, you know, talks, I'm hearing this, I'm hearing that. But we all know now this deal's difficult. And I think, you know, you can almost just go, that's it. It's not a blow. It's not off. It's not on. It's not here we go. It's not imminent. It's not concrete. This is a player that we really like, that other people really like, and West Ham want ridiculous money for. It's probably going to take time. And that's a bit of a setback because we want to move quickly. And Lewis Hall will give you the update in a minute. We want to move quick. We've got Ederson. That's a good start. But we're approaching the middle of June. And if the middle of June becomes the end of June and we've only got Ederson, we haven't got a lot of time. We've got 2 months to get 5-6 players in. So we do want to be moving quick. But I am not going to criticise the club on this. In essence, as long as they have a plan and they stick to that plan and they achieve that plan, ultimately, pre-season's a bit of a non-entity this year because there is a World Cup going on. So I think that as long as we can achieve what we want to achieve, we might have to wait a little bit. We might have to be patient with Fernandez. And I think that's what I would say. Maybe it felt like a here we go was coming a week or two ago. Yeah, I think some people were expecting by now we might have Fernandez here we go or whatever. I don't think that's going to happen. Things can change very, very quickly, but it looks like this is going to be a long running deal. And also what you have to remember as well, and this would be my big takeaway, because I know it, and I think a lot of you know it, but I think it needs to be out there. We're not just talking to Fernandez. Like, in a midfield sense, some people are reporting it like we're just talking to Fernandez. We're not doing that. We're lining up opportunities, because what if Fernandez just comes out and says, I want to go to Arsenal or I want to go to PSG? It's off. And all the work we've done is a waste. United categorically, absolutely 100% are not just talking to Fernandez. So believe what you want to believe, of course. But if you think United are, you know, two-footed in on Fernandez and it's all or nothing, we're not. We actually are talking to other people because this Fernandez deal is difficult. Now, there will become, I completely agree with The Athletic, there will become a point where West Ham have to start dealing with us or somebody else because they can't keep him. If West Ham had stayed up, you might go, well, what if they keep him? They might hold out for 80 million and they might keep him. They've been relegated. They need money. They will do a deal. It just probably won't be today. And it might not be tomorrow. And it might not be next week. It might be next month. But they will do a deal. They're also trying to play the field as well. They're trying to, as I said last night, I think they know there's strong interest from more than two clubs because they've hit a very high price for a relegated side. So, yeah. But look, I will call out the Prats who are saying, the record transfer fee for somebody who's been relegated is £45 million from, I think it was Labia. It's absolutely irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. There is no limit on what a relegated player goes for. I don't think I'm worried about the price. I'm worried about where we need to be on it. Wes says they've hyped up the Fernandez story too early. I think some people have. Yeah, I do. I think they have. I think some people in their defense thought it was going to be Mbeumo, where Mbeumo said, I want Man United, and then United negotiate. I think some people thought that's what was going to happen with Fernandez, and it's not happened. So I think that, as I said on Saturday, I think a bid is, you know, a first bid will go in from somebody very soon. But if there's multiple clubs interested, it looks like it might take a bit of time, to be honest. I still think United really, really want him. But it depends where United have him. If he's the second midfielder, they'll have a limit. If he's the priority midfielder, they'll have a little bit more leeway. Depends what Man United have said about what their limitations are. Because there was a great comment on the show last night. If United's midfield is meant to be Ederson, Fernandez and, let's say, Tchouaméni, they'll have a limit of what they're expecting to play on Fernandez. And if it just we don't know yet, and that's going to be the big report, is Fernandez meant to be the number one or is he meant to be the number two? Because if he's the number two, there will be a limit on what we want to pay. And if he's the number one, there'll be a limit, but it'll be higher. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. On a positive note, Alex Scott at Bournemouth is very, very different. And in the same article in The Athletic, it says this. Suitors for Alex Scott might feel they have a chance to agree a deal with Bournemouth closer to £60 million. With his current deal set to expire in 2028, Bournemouth are keen to tie the midfielder down. However, they'd be open to including a release clause in any new contract, believed to be around £75 million. He is a potential target for Manchester United. Now, look, I'm not here to go Alex Scott or Fernandez. That's not what we need to do. We can do that, but we don't need to do that. Because, as we know, Man United are talking to more than one midfielder. And it's that mindset that some people won't accept, but some people will. Maybe Fernandez is high on our list, but we are talking to other players. It's not like we want Fernandez, we want Fernandez, we want Fernandez, we didn't get him, let's move down the list. We are actually operating like a proper football club should be operating, whereby it's a competitive midfield market. We need to buy three, and we might not get the three we want, so we should be talking to six or seven or eight, and that's what we're doing. So Alex Scott could be one of those people. Now, what I would say about Scott, and this is the same for Liverpool, Man United, or any other clubs that's looking at him, and I'd also say it to Scott as well, if he signs that contract at Bournemouth, he instantly has a £75 million release clause. If he doesn't sign that contract at Bournemouth, somebody could negotiate him down to 50. It just depends what he wants to do over the next year. Because if he has another year at Bournemouth and he does really well, but he signed that contract, it's 75 million, which is quite off-putting. Even if he has a good season at Bournemouth, it's off. 75 million is a lot of money. And he might not be in the England team in a year's time. However, if he says, I want to go now, and he goes to Man United or he goes to Liverpool, he probably will be in the England team and it'll be a lot easier for him to go because he's got a bit of, you know, he's got 2 years left on his deal. So it depends whether, as I think Kelvin makes a great point, does he want to help Bournemouth out or not? Now, he'll help Bournemouth out by going for 55 million with add-ons. I don't think he'll sign that contract. I wouldn't sign that contract. And I like Bournemouth, but I wouldn't sign it because the minute you sign it, there's a massive release clause next to your name. Whereas if he doesn't sign it, he can say, look, I'll stay next season, but I'll have 1 year left on my contract next summer and I'll be going for like 30, 40. Or you can let me go now for 50, 55 with add-ons. So I think that whilst Fernandez is a very competitive one and a very high price, Scott is a competitive one at a more reasonable price. So there are options. And I like Scott. So I think that's a bit of a boost around him. There was a time, I think Ben Jacobs said it maybe a week or two ago, that Bournemouth were quite optimistic about Scott signing a new deal. But I think that the World Cup can be a good thing and a bad thing. We're going to talk about Lewis Hall next. And I think the World Cup's had a big impact on Lewis Hall. I actually think the World Cup might have had a big impact on Fernandes and Scott as well, because neither of them, I mean, it's hard for Fernandes to get in a Portuguese World Cup squad, but he would have been very close. And Scott is literally with this squad. He's a standby player, but he's not going to be part of it. So it sharpens the mind of, I was that close to being in the World Cup squad and I'm probably not in it because Mainoo plays for Man United. And I'm not saying that Scott's better than Mainoo, but I think if Scott had been playing in Man United's midfield and Mainoo had been playing in Bournemouth's midfield, it would be Mainoo on standby and Scott in the World Cup, because two very different midfielders, but very good end of seasons, both of them. So I just think with Scott, he might look at it and go, I was that close. I was that close to an England squad for the World Cup. Do I want to put myself in that position next summer or the summer after that? Or do I want to put myself in a Liverpool shirt or a Man United shirt where it's more in my hands? And, you know, that is true. That is true. It's definitely true. Scott's way better than Mainoo, says Shane. I think they're very different players. I think they're very different players. And I would be very happy with Fernandes or Scott. I would not be happy with Fernandes and Scott. I want to make that very, very clear. My desire is that Fernandes is in the mid-tier with Scott and we get one of them. And then top tier, it's Anderson. It's Anderson. That would have been a slip. It's Anderson, Tonali or Tchouaméni. We have a lot to do, says Seth. Buy and sell. I worry that with the World Cup taking a month and United record with multitasking, we'll go for mediocrity just to fill the squad, says Seth. Well, that brings me on to the next point. I want to talk about Lewis Hall, because essentially there's an update that came in about Lewis Hall as well. Let me just get it for you. So here it was. Here it is. As per Laurie Whitwell and The Athletic, Manchester United admire Lewis Hall. Newcastle aren't looking to sell. However, offers in the region of £50 million might test that resolve. So what
what does that mean? Look, I think in relation to Lewis Hall, it's another one. And the reason I bring it in relation to what Seth is saying is we've got this World Cup that's going to start in 2 days. It's going to run for 5.5 weeks. It doesn't really finish until the middle of July. Everybody who plays in it's going to get 2 or 3 weeks off. So if you're part of the World Cup, you're not kicking a ball you're not kicking a pre-season football until August the 1st at the earliest. So it's going to wipe out a lot of players for the next 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks. And I think we all know about that. But I think where we think there is an opportunity is with the likes of Fernandes and Hall and Scott, these players that aren't part of the World Cup, that maybe we can move on. But I think there is a home truth. I think there is a wake-up call in a sense that when you look at Mbeumo, it took weeks to do that deal. And when I look at Lewis Hall, yes, we get these updates that Man United admire Lewis Hall, but we don't ever get anything more than that. All we ever get is Newcastle don't want to sell him, Man United admire him, and Lewis Hall is on holiday. It may never develop beyond that. He might come back from holiday, go into pre-season, the season starts, and nothing ever happens. That could be the fruit of the Lewis Hall story. Literally, comes back, does pre-season, nothing ever happens. It might never develop from admiration. It might develop from comes back from holiday and says, look, I really want to go. And then, you know, July becomes interesting. My point is on Lewis Hall, it's a little bit like Fernandes, but different. But similar in the sense that it's not something that's going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen next week. It's another deal that is going to be, you know, back end of June, July, before anything really starts to happen. Now, it's about how many of those we can stack up. It's about how many of those we can put off. Because if Fernandes is going to take a while, and Lewis Hall is going to take a while, and neither of them are guaranteed. Even if you get them, there's other deals that need to be done as well. How many can we stack up for July, you know? I mean, if Fernandes goes on for a few weeks and Lewis Hall doesn't start until early July, and then you still need another midfielder as well, and whatever else we need, how late into the window are we going to do this? And how much time are we going to leave ourselves to do it? And that can be a criticism, but it can also be a reality. Like, what deal could we be working on? And this is the, you know, some of you might say, wow, you banged your head or something. But there will be people moaning, and quite rightly in a way, because we do need to do a deal every 2 weeks. If we want to buy 7 players, we need to do a deal every 2 weeks. You can work out the maths. 2 weeks deal, 2 weeks deal, 2 weeks deal, end of August. So we do need to be doing a deal every 2 weeks. But that's only if you want to figure it out over the time that's left. Actually, you might do 2 deals in a week, and that means you don't need to do another one for a month. So the question is, though, as was said there, are United going to change the past and be able to multitask on deals? That's going to be very interesting. But I suppose the big question is, what deal can Man United do at the moment? In fairness, what actual deal can Man United work on at the moment? Alex Scott is part of the England squad playing friendlies in America. Lewis Hall is on holiday and probably thinking about his future. Fernandes has multiple clubs after him and a massive price. Tchouaméni is with the French squad. Anderson is with the England squad and dealing with bids from Manchester City. Tonali's in Italy doing very little, but we don't want to. And I agree with Gaz, we could work on that, but we don't seem to want to. So there are deals we can work on, but obviously Tonali's not a priority. So I think that, you know, and also let's not forget, we're talking about signings. Some people are talking about outgoings. If Marcus Rashford isn't going to Barcelona, that's another load of work we've got to do. That won't just happen itself. If Rashford doesn't go to Barcelona, we've got to find him a club as well. So we are stacking up a lot of work to do in July and August. It's not impossible, but there is a lot of work to do in July and August if we don't utilise June. The question is, what can we do in June? And I think Man United probably would like to get Fernandes or Scott done in June, and probably still can. But Fernandes is obviously becoming a little bit more problematic than they thought it would. Hi, Mark. United Stan, hope you're well. I'd like to get Fernandes, but if not, I'd like to get Scott, and he could be the ultimate investment, as get him now for 50 or face paying 90 million next season. Tonali or Chiumini, my top midfield target still. Good morning, Daniel. Thank you very much for your super chat there. Steg says, do you not think they're pushing these Fernandes is hard to get articles, so they eventually buy him and push him as our tier one new midfield signing, says Steg. I mean, you never know with United what they're pushing. They might already know they've got Fernandes and they let it go, and then they go, oh, look, we've won the race. Maybe PSG aren't in for him. Maybe Arsenal aren't in for him. Maybe it is just Man United who want him. We these things will come out, and that will change the pacing and speediness of the story. My only issue with that would be is that I don't think we can sell Fernandes as the Casemiro replacement. I think that You can hype it up as much as you like, but I'm against that. I don't think that's the right thing. I do not think that Fernandes is the right player for it. Sorry, let me just get rid of Zane. There we go. I will just block these people, but basically it was like another setback from Mark. It's a new show at 10 o'clock. I don't think you understand the stupidity of your intelligence when you come on this community and make out that we're making the stories up. It's literally been a news show for 10 years and we are actually giving the sources of the story. So you will get blocked because you're just wasting everyone's time. But that's just a warning, a line in the sand for any other moron who can't utilize their IQ enough to actually understand what the show's about. Because it just wastes everyone's time. Good riddance, as Kelvin says. Yeah, they're just thick people. Not settling for not having buy-in from the player, so no bid. If they don't even... Sorry, let me get this. This sounds interesting from El President. Not settling for the not having buy-in from the player, so no bid. If they don't even bid, put in a bid on Anderson, they need to publicly explain what happened. It's borderline stock market manipulation. I don't know that it's stock market manipulation. But I do get what you mean. Like, yeah, Romero to Man United last night, 12 hours later, United tell multiple journalists they're not in for Romero. Anderson to Man United for 9 months. At no point did Man United say it's not true, but then he's holding up a Man City shirt. So I do get what you mean, but it is frustrating, but let's wait and see. I still hold out a belief that we can sign Elliot Anderson, and I've said that before. But who was that midfielder from Sunderland everyone was raving about? Is he suitable, Mark? Not Xhaka, says Christopher. Rig. And I don't know what happened to him. Little bit like Hayden Hackney. Christopher Rigg at Sunderland was the next big thing that we should be signing, and I've not heard a bloody thing about him for 12 months. But yeah, I don't think he's suitable. We have a lot to do. It's done that from Seth. I'm hearing it's Qatar, says Eugene. Yep. Love the show, Mark. It's perfectly timed as well. You finished just ahead of my swimming lesson. Swimming season, says Bale Ward Justice. Thank you very much. Hi, Mark. Hope you're well. Could you please help explain the Anderson situation after Jamie Jackson's update last night? If we're actively trying for him, does that mean we're negotiating with his agents, says VR. The Anderson story is really easy. Because you don't even need to know anybody to know anything about this. If you look at the updates from people like Ben Jacobs, who we've got on the show tomorrow at 2, or Fabrizio Romano, or David Ornstein, or Laurie Whitwell, or the Manchester Evening News, it's absolutely true that Man United really do like Elliot Anderson. Top priority. What's never been established is the depth of the talks we've had. Now, we have held talks with Anderson's people because it would be illogical not to. You can't have 9 months of we really like him and not speak to him. We obviously have held talks with him. Where we're at today, nobody knows. Apparently, we're still monitoring. Apparently, we're still there. Apparently, we're still interested. The general consensus is that Man City have just been more aggressive and they put a very lucrative offer on the table. And they've basically wined and dined Anderson and his team. You know, they've had the conversations with the agent. They've, you know, put their presentation forward and they're now trying to get a fee agreed with Forrest. So it's probably very, very close to completion because it feels like the player and the agent have agreed terms with Man City and now Man City just need to agree the fee with Nottingham Forest. But because Man City is such a strangely supported football club in the sense that they do have a lot of fans, but they don't have anything like the United stand or anything like the general interest in their club. Man City, when they sign a player, they don't have what we have or Arsenal have or even Liverpool have. When Liverpool or Arsenal or Man United are interested in a player, you have the stages of a transfer. You have talks, personal terms agreed, here we go, official, right? At Man City, they don't have that because they don't have that sort of interest in their club. So, you know, Elliot Anderson, if we were in that position, he might be at terms agreed. He may well have agreed the terms with Man City and they're just waiting to do the deal with Nottingham Forest. That might be the situation. That's sort of how I interpret it. But it's very difficult because Man City don't have the City stand. They don't have this type of content. They don't have this type of interest. So if we were doing what Man City's doing, I feel that we'd be saying terms agreed with the player. We've now just got to do the fee with Nottingham Forest. So how do Man United come into that? And I've got to be fair, what other stage are they at then? It's only because, like I say, City just don't have that level of interest. But I feel that they probably are, unless you correct me, it feels like they are at terms agreed. In the process of a transfer, as we understand and report it, it feels like that's where they're at because they're bidding with Man City, they're bidding with Forest. So I think they're at terms agreed with Anderson. And it was Romano who reported they were in advanced talks back in March. So I think they're at terms agreed. So what are we at? What are we monitoring? Because the minute Forest say yes, it's over. So I don't know what last night's update from The Guardian even means because I feel that Man City are at terms agreed and waiting to do the deal with Forest, whereas we're just monitoring. So, and I guarantee you that if we were at a point where it's terms agreed and we're both just bidding, we'd know about it. United don't like, you know, the problem with United is we don't like bidding wars. We don't like competition. You know, you look at the hint is Semenyu. We wanted Semenyu, but the minute he agreed terms with Man City, we backed off. So we don't like competition. So I don't know with Anderson. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It's just, as many people have said, it feels really strange that we spend 9 months saying this is the priority and then we don't do anything. And maybe we'll find out the truth. Maybe we won't. Maybe it's just as simple as we don't want to pay the wages that Man City are offering. Because I'm telling you what, if you're a professional footballer and Man City and Man United want you, and Man City want to give you 250 grand a week, and Man United only want to give you 175. That's a lot of money to turn down just because you want Manchester United, isn't it? So I think maybe United just haven't put the terms on the table that Manchester City have. And you can say, well, he should choose us over Man City, but ultimately, you know, he's probably not wrong wanting 250 grand a week. And the worst thing in the world that United have in any negotiation with a player like Anderson is Mason Mount. Because if I'm his agent, I'm saying, so Man City have offered us 250 grand a week. You won't match it. You're offering 175 grand a week, but you've got Mason Mount, who's going to be on the training ground when he's fit, running around on more money than Elliot Anderson, who will be starting for you every week. But you won't give him 250 grand. And I think this is speculative, but that's a problem, isn't it? It's one thing to say we can only afford 175 grand a week. It's another thing to say we can only afford 175 grand a week, but you're going to be training with Mason Mount, who's on 250. That's the problem Man United have got. They're trying to lower a wage bill, but on the training ground, they've got players that offer very little on very good wages. What does he bring to team compared to Fernandes, says Ben Croft. Who? Anderson. Anderson is statistically and to the eye test probably the most rounded midfielder in the Premier League. Whereas Fernandes is potentially a very rounded midfielder, but not operating at that level yet. So I think that's how I would describe it. I hope no one buys Fernandes. This is the same thing Brent Brighton did last season, tagging Belabor at 100 million over, only for him to depreciate massively in value. 85 million for a relegated team, in my opinion, is nuts, says Kate Kinney. Yeah, and I do get a little bit tired of saying this, but you know, sometimes education is key. Roy Keane left relegated Nottingham Forest. There was a bidding war between Blackburn and Manchester United, and we broke the British transfer record. So we broke the British transfer record for a relegated player. It can happen if the player's good enough. United not matching City for Anderson also tells the player they probably don't value him as much as City would. Yes, yes, it sends a bad message, doesn't it? Somerville, 35 million, or Barcola, 80 million. Who's your favourite for left wing? Says Old Trafford. Well, we're not going to sign Barcola. I like Somerville. I think he's in the World Cup with the Netherlands as well. I can see Carrick wanting to keep Rashford if no Barcelona, says Steg. I hope not. I hope not. I think it's a bad move. I don't think Rashford wants to come back. I don't think Man United want him back. And I don't think Michael Carrick's going to have the sway to do that. Few said Siddiqui, says Christopher. And El President has gifted a membership. Thank you very much for that. Patrick Lynch is in the house with a chat, super chat. Thank you, Patrick. He says, Scott is 23 soon, limiting his time to make the jump to a bigger club. And I think Bournemouth know this too. Big question is for both parties, is it worth him staying an extra year when interest and price may fall over time? Yeah, and I think Alex Scott's quite similar to Lewis Hall, Patrick, in the sense that it's got to be driven by what the player wants. If the player wants to go this summer, then they can push for that and do that. If the player wants to stay this summer, then he will end up staying this summer. It really is that simple. Moving on, let me talk to you about something else. I don't know what people think about this. Samuel Lookhurst used to work for the Manchester Evening News. He now works for The Sun. I mean, on the one hand, you get stuff like Man United will not be moving for Cucurella. He is not on United's radar. This is from Samuel Lookhurst. But on the other hand, you get updates about the midfield like this. Let me just read this one out to you. Here is it. Let me get it. No, it's not that one. Bear with me. Make sure you smash a like on the video while I'm doing this. I read it somewhere this morning. Oh, come on. Might be this one. No. Make sure you're ready before you start. Here it is. Also from Samuel Lookhurst, Michael Carrick wants Manchester United to assemble a midfield trio. So Carrick wants to assemble a midfield trio based on PSG's system. Carrick considers Vitinha, Ruiz and João Neves to be the benchmark amid United's midfield overhaul. Carrick wants United to develop a more dominant playing style for his full fourth season in charge, with Mainoo's role due to be tweaked. Mainoo has embraced more defensive responsibilities under Carrick, whilst also emerging as a key attacking cog. Carrick wants Mainoo to start attacking spaces in behind defences in order to become a more rounded midfielder. And it's at this point where I think that never happened. And this is the problem with people like Lookhurst, is like you might get a little bit of transfer stuff and you think maybe they're right. But at what point has Michael Carrick rang up Samuel Lookhurst and given him such detail? So Michael Carrick wants Man United to assemble a midfield like PSG. He wants to dominate the playing style more, and he wants Mainoo to occupy spaces in behind defences to become a more rounded midfielder. And what a load of bollocks. At what point would it ever enter Michael Carrick's mind to sit down with Samuel Lookhurst or ring him up and give him that detail about what he wants to do in the midfield? I just think it's bullshit. Absolute bullshit. And that's the thing we have to be careful about, is that in a world of so many people wanting to give so much news, we always have to remember that 95% of it, probably even more, will be complete and utter bollocks. So it's almost a red flag, really, of taking a step back, like we were talking about last night. This push to be first on Fernandes, I think, has led people to pushing the fan base towards it's inevitable. And it's clearly not. There's clearly a lot of work to be done on it. And this talk about, you know, what Michael Carrick wants to build with the midfield is completely and utterly the opposite of what we've just done for 5 months. Carrick brought in Steve Holland and we played like Southgate. With England, we got really good results with limited possession and counter-attacking football. But now we're going to build a PSG midfield and dominate the opposition. And I think, you know what? We've got to learn to walk before we can run. I want Man United to play better football under Michael Carrick next season. And I'm sure Michael Carrick wants us to play better football. But we're not assembling a PSG-style midfield in the space of 3 months. Jurgen Klopp did one of the most amazing things I've ever seen happen in a summer transfer window when he basically changed his midfield in one summer. He brought in Gravenberch, McAllister, Endo and Szoboszlai in one summer. And I never shut up about it on That's Football because I was like, that is so impressive to rebuild a midfield in the space of 3 months and get it right is incredibly impressive. That's what's in front of us. It's very rare. It's very hard. And a lot of things have got to go your way. I'm occupied on that before I'm thinking about style of play and everything like that. We've just got to make sure we get three midfielders in that helps our midfield be competitive next season, because we don't know what we're walking into next season with regards to the Premier League. We don't know how good Chelsea will be under their new manager, or Liverpool under their new manager, or Man City under their new manager. We don't know how good Newcastle and Chelsea are going to be without any European football, or Spurs even. So the competition next season is huge. And I don't know why you're saying Wirtz is a flop, mate, because he's talking about the wrong summer and the wrong position and the wrong manager of Liverpool. God, we need an IQ test for this show sometimes. But yeah, I think that the style of play and everything like that is completely and utterly irrelevant until you get Mike. And the reason I wanted to mention that is that even if Michael Carrick wants to replicate the PSG style of play, if we don't get him the right types of players, it won't matter. It simply won't matter. We have to bring in the right types of players, because if Carrick wants to play a certain way and then Wilcox knocks on his door and says, you know, you wanted Ederson, Fernandes and Tchouaméni. Right, okay. We've got Tyler Adams, Ederson and Baleba. Michael, why are you crying? Michael, why are you crying? Yeah, so you've got to get him the players before you start talking about styles of play. And we've got to be very... Look, I didn't want Carrick, but I said when we give him the job, I will back him and I want him to be given time and I want him to do well. But we've got to fight against winning the league next year. We've got to fight against dominating style of play, because I might not have wanted Carrick, but I know how hard that job is. And if we're going into next season talking about title charges and dominant football, I think the chances of that happening in the first 3 months are minimal. I think we're more likely to play in the first 3 months like we did in the last 3 months. I think we're more likely to be fighting for fourth and third than we are than first and second. But if people start pontificating about dominating style of play and fighting for the title, I think it becomes problematic, because as we know, with certain sections of this fan base, they can be quite easily led. And then when them things don't happen, they can be quite shouty. So the priority has to be what type of transfer window we get. And then after that, we've got to sort of figure out what we think we can do with that transfer window. There's no point talking about styles of play or where we're going to finish in the league, because if we get three midfielders that are good, we may be able to pitch higher than third place. If we get three midfielders that don't excite, we might be talking about if we can get fourth, it's a good thing. So it's about what we do in the market that's going to dictate everything else. Patrick Lynch says, everyone talks about how PSG play, but does that work with the intensity and competitiveness of a 38-game Premier League season? PSG get games rescheduled constantly to help them be successful. Also, Patrick, PSG tend to be quite dodgy until March. They do. PSG had fallen off before Christmas. They pace themselves perfectly because they're in a league where they can do that. Do we need an out-and-out winger, says Rahul? I think the misprofiling of Dorgu is hilarious. I keep seeing people saying Dorgu's not going to be used as a winger. And yeah. If Dorgu's not a winger, then what is he? I mean, he is a winger. So if he's a winger and Ahmad's a winger and Mbeumo's a winger, then what's Cunha? That's the only thing. Tobe says, I've just checked for fun. Elliot Anderson is now following Man City on Instagram. He's been doing that for a very long time, mate. It's nothing new. He has been following them for a long time. Do you not think United could be waiting to get Rashford's wages off the bill before getting Anderson, Mark? But Badis, if we are waiting to do that, then we will lose, because whilst we're trying to do that, Manchester City will get the deal done. And this is why we didn't get Elise, because we didn't actually have the money to go toe-to-toe with Bayern Munich. What's this? Sorry, Manchester United believe they can open discussions with West Ham for £60 million. With add-ons, you never know. You never know. Sorry, I'm just having a quick roundup here. There is some talk around the goalkeeper. I mean, I find this stuff, you know me, I love the transfer window. I love the conversation. I love the community. And I am quite relaxed. As I said last night, I'm not going to panic about anything around Fernandes, because I know we're talking to other people and I still think we can get him. I just think we need to be a little bit patient and people need to calm down a little bit. But there are aspects of the transfer window that bore the shit out of me. And I'll give you my top three, right? My top three switch-offs around the transfer window are, what's going to happen with Ugarte? I just don't find that interesting at all. I don't. Any Ugarte stories, I just go, oh, God. Who the backup goalkeeper is going to be? Again, I find that incredibly boring. And Xerxes wants to stay at Man United, so we might not buy a striker. I mean, those three have to be the biggest boring stories of the summer. I'm not interested in who the backup goalkeeper is going to be. Welcome to the club. Let's move on. I'm not going to do a here we go video for it, whether it's Darlow, Johnston, whatever. Welcome. Thank you. Move on. Ugarte leaving on loan or whatever. And Xerxes, when he makes his mind up, staying or going, I'm not interested in as well. So, yeah. But apparently we're looking at goalkeepers. Carl says it should be Vitek. Well, it shouldn't be Vitek. Actually, it shouldn't be Vitek. I completely agree with this, and I've heard a few people say it. Vitek should not be the backup goalkeeper at Manchester United at all. He's just won every award possible at Bristol City, like Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year, Fans Player of the Year. He doesn't want to come and sit on the bench for Le Mans. So he's too good to be a backup goalkeeper. He doesn't want to come and sit and be a backup goalkeeper. He wants a move or a loan to another club. I disagree with Jim's. Jim said Vitek should be a first team goalkeeper. Not at Man United. You know, he shouldn't be playing for Manchester United. But what would be interesting is to get him a decent loan to somebody that's going to pick him and see what he's all about. Because I think with Le Mans, we've got the right guy. But I don't think Vitek's too good to be the backup goalkeeper. And also, he's still quite young. Your backup goalkeeper is probably better off being Sam Johnston. 33 years of age, been at the club before, played a lot of football for the likes of Wolves and West Brom. I think Sam Johnston fits the bill, but it's boring. Backup goalkeepers are boring. I mean, the only decent backup goalkeeper we've ever had was probably Romero. And even then, you know, we don't... Just get somebody in who can do a job, basically. Goldfridge says, you can't have a fluid rotational system like PSG's while centering your whole team around one player like Bruno. PSG's midfield and attack are one unit with no player bigger than the system. Yeah, I mean, we're not playing like PSG. You're absolutely right. Our midfield will quite rightly be centered around Bruno Fernandes. Bruno Fernandes has got very little positional discipline. He's right back, he's left wing. He's right wing, he's centre back, he's everywhere. So if you have Bruno Fernandes in your midfield, you have to accept he will roam, and wherever he lays his hat, that's his home. So you need two midfielders with him who are disciplined positionally. They have to understand their role, otherwise the midfield gets run over. So our midfield, whilst Bruno's here, will be very, very dependent on having two players with discipline to, you know, cover the spaces that Bruno will leave when he drifts into areas to make an impact. Thank you very much for that as well. Good point, good point, good point. Over 10,000 watching again this morning. You're absolute legends. Lots of people saying just get Alex Scott. I mean, I think with Alex Scott, what I would say is... I will stop the stream in a minute. What I would say about Alex Scott is that in a market that's very fragile in the sense that, you know, Anderson, Tonali, somewhere around £100 million. Fernandes has gone from being 50 million to 80 million. Alex Scott will go for about 50 to 60 million pounds. If he decides he's going, he won't go for anything more than 60. So he is a very stable midfielder in a market that Brighton won't sell Belabor for less than 70. West Ham don't seem to want to sell Fernandes for less than 70, but because Scott's got 2 years left on his contract, he will go for about 50 to 60. But he can only come in as the second midfielder. If you buy Scott, you have to buy a Tchouaméni or an Anderson as well. Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in this morning. As always, we are back at 2 o'clock today and I'm with you at 8 o'clock. We will go live if anything happens, of course, so make sure you're subscribing to the channel. Another fantastic show from all of you lot. Really enjoyed it. We got through quite a lot and it's interesting. I think the big takeaway today as well is that what we've learned is that Man United will shut down a story very, very quickly if they want to. Romero to Man United last night. Multiple Man United journalists this morning, it's not true. Within 12 hours, Man United shut a story down. But then others, they leave them. If we've got no intention of going for Anderson, why are we still letting it go out there? And that's the weird world of United sometimes. Romero's story, shut it down. Anderson, don't shut it down. Even though he's probably agreed terms with Man City and is very close to signing them, we won't shut it down. Don't know why. Have a great day, everyone. Stay safe. I'll speak to you on the next one.